Welcome back to episode 13 of the Backstreet Podcast. I'm Danny Squires and I'm here with my co-host Michael McKnight. Michael, how you going?
I'm good, Danny. I'm good. It's been a busy 10 days in terms of competition, so probably a lot to talk about.
Yep, we've got a jam-packed agenda. I think we're going to maybe sort of hone in on a couple of key events that we want to talk in greater depth about, and then we'll sort of do a bit of a quick fire results at the end of the towards the end of the first half of this episode. So yeah, we're actually being joined in the second half of the episode by Marty Ray, and I think we're just going to go a bit of a deep dive on London Marathon plus a bit of marathoning chat. But before that, we'll sort of get chatting about a few of the races. So what's coming up in the episode, Michael?
So we're going to focus in detail on the Intercounties Cross Country and the Queen's 5K. And then I think we're going to try and offer a very speedy roundup of the other events that have caught our eye. And I think one of them you may have been involved in. And we're always keen to hear how you get on. The view from Danny.
The race reports, the view from the mid pack. So Intercounties, that was last weekend over in Nottingham in over in England there. You were over there, Michael, is that right?
Yeah, I was there as was actually had to work. I was the team manager for the men's team, and along with Kathy Diver from Beachmount, who was the ladies' manager. So the Intercounties is, along with the English National Cross Country, it's the blue ribboned event of UK cross country. So teams come from all over England. Each county represents a team. Scotland sends several teams, Wales the same, and Northern Ireland. And for our athletes, for most of them, it's probably at the highest level they can compete, certainly in cross country. So to get on a podium to compete is really, really hard because we're a small population. Okay, so the race was at Wallaton Park, just on the outskirts of Nottingham. It's a stately home with a beautiful parkland course, but featuring a really, really challenging climb every lap. But great underfoot conditions, and it was a really, really good race to watch. A great spectacle. So, talk about the ladies' team first of all. It was a very inexperienced team with several first-time bests. They finished 11th out of 28 teams, which I thought was a great effort. Led home by Robin McKee in 36th, followed by Joanne Mills, Jennifer Martin, Helen Lavery, who I think all made the top 100. It was a stacked field. The team was completed by Kate Mulholland and Natalie Hall. It's the first time Northern Ireland and Ulster have managed to finish a team for quite some time. You know, many times we've been hit by last minute withdrawals, etc., etc. But what really struck me was just the absolute enthusiasm and pride that the ladies who were selected had for the vests. And several of them, Kate and Jennifer, brought some travelling support, which was great, family members, boyfriends, and also shout out to Francie Purvis, Coach Purvis, who's athlete Jennifer from Tofelta. I think it's Tofelta's first international vest. He travelled over from Mid-Ulster to watch his runner. That's dedication. And he was a
Amazing.
very proud man, yeah. So
Yeah,
moving on.
I was chatting to Robin, just asking her for a bit of a recap, and yeah, she said it was a fantastic day, really good race, and that, yeah, as you said, the vibes after the race were really good. Everyone was really stoked and really happy to be there, and the men's and the women's team really came together, and yeah, nice way to represent Northern Ireland, I think.
Absolutely. So men's race, the team were hit by a late withdrawal due to illness from Craig McMeekin, which was a loss. And young Oisin Toy from Finn Valley, who won the intermediate cross country, stepped into the breach and didn't let anybody down. The team was led in by Finn McNally in 14th. And Finn does his usual trick as he went to the front and he mixed it with the big boys. And just faded a wee bit. He's had a long season and actually had planned this to be his sort of rest period, but didn't want to let the team down. He was followed in the top 30 by Neil Johnson and Iskander. And then we had to drop back to the 60s and 70s, which is still really, really fine running for Luke Dinsmore, who's making his debut, Conan McCaughey, and then Oisin, who was just outside the top 100. But the big news is, the men's team got on the podium with a really superb third place. behind the northeast in Yorkshire. The race this year was also the trial for the Great Britain World Cross Country selection, so the fields were, I think, really strong. So getting a medal in that kind of, quality is really, really good. I kind of always also was left with the thought that, if we could get Andrew Milligan, a fit Conall McLean, Matthew Lavery, some of the young guns out as well in that team, we could have a team in future years that could maybe go and win that, which would be quite something. So that's maybe something to kind of target in coming years. But yeah, all in all, a really good weekend.
Yeah, a couple of points from me. As you said, Finn McNally did what Finn McNally does off the front early, and I was watching the live stream, which was actually really good, and I could see him right there, obviously that bleach blonde hair, and yeah, I was wondering how it was going to go, but yeah, brilliant race to take it on like that. Yeah, another thing as well, I was actually going to ask. So you were over there as team manager for, was it just for the men's team or the overall team?
Just for the
Yeah.
men's team,
So what
yeah.
does that sort of involve? Are you there holding water bottles or talking
Kind
tactics?
of. Well, it sort of helps if you know the athletes. Then I know all the guys. I hadn't met Oisin before, but I knew of him. You're just a bit of a gopher, and then on the day, sort of organizing the guys, trying to cheer them on around the course. There's a wee bit of organization in terms of making sure we've got taxis to and from the venue, things like that. You're really a cheerleader, and we also asked Conan, who was one of the more experienced runners, to act as a team captain, and just having a bit of chat with the guys and trying to G them up before the start of the race and things. Kathy was great with the ladies, particularly with a couple of debutants, just reassuring people, because it can be quite daunting when you go to a big competition like that for the first time. But yeah, it's a nice thing to be a part of, and post race, the crack was great. Finn McNally is a really, really, really good guy, and a lot of fun. We had a beer after the race, and there was a lot of laughs.
Very good. Yeah, it's
Yeah,
I'm
I tried to persuade
interested.
him,
Yeah.
to come on the pod, but he's not biting. He says he would just, talk a lot of crap and just really dig a hole for himself. So.
Perfect. I think he'd fit in well around here
He would,
then.
like, what do we do every week? Yeah.
I'm interested. I mean, cross country is one of those interesting ones where it's almost like a team sport. And so, putting two teams in there that, there's not going to be anyone who's going to potentially place first, second, or third on the podium at such a big race. I'm interested to know what kind of tactics are discussed. Is, let's try and stick together or just try and run your own race and run as hard as you can.
I think it. In a field of that size and depth and quality, I think pretty much runners have to run their own race. We've a range of ability within the squad, so the like of Finn and Iskander and Neil can go out, hard and be up in the first 30, 40, Finn even up in the first 10. But for some of the less experienced athletes to do that would be suicide, because if you went out too big, you would not lose 10, 20, 30 places. You'll lose 100 places, because right down through the field, outside the first 100 in the men's race, I would say there were guys who are still capable of running, 31-minute 10Ks, 31-30s. So we're talking super depth. So you've got to kind of mind yourself, and be strategic. So I think it's just a case for me of reassuring the runners and saying, look, run to your own plan. But also, the big thing, I think you hit the nail on the head team wise, is even if you're having a shocker, we only had, it was six to score in each race, so nobody can bail out. So even if you're having a terrible day, you've just got to, dig in and hang in there for the team. And I think that's a really worthwhile thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. British Athletics actually named the team for GB and NI today. So the senior women, it was Niamh Brown, Abby Donnelly, Alice Goodall, Lauren McNeil, and Jess Warner-Judd. And then the senior men's team was Will Barnacote, Tom Evans, ultra runner. Love
Yeah.
that. Callum Johnson, James Kingston, and Scott Sterling. So, yeah, they were right up in the mix on the race day.
Yeah, the first two in the men's race, Callum Johnson won it for the second time in 3 years, I think. And Tom Evans are both got a mountain kind of background, very strong guys, and the course really suited them. I mean, they were running up the hill, which was pretty severe, basically at the same speed as we were running on the flat almost, and was really noticeable. But then again, cross country should be a test of strength, and it's great to see a course where the true cross country runners rise to the top.
Tom Evans, he's an absolute beast the way he trains, and like his range is pretty spectacular, going from being able to win a 100-mile race to now getting selected for European Cross or World Cross. Look, maybe we move on from there. We can talk about the Queen's 5K. So Queen's Round the River 5K, which was the NI and Ulster 5K champs, and it actually had a bit of a changed format this year. I think in the past it sort of was like a mass event kind of race where they had maybe, 700 or 800 people all on the same start line going at the same time. This year they sort of split it up into, I mean, obviously there's the 3K race, but then they had the 5K elite field, which was anyone who was sub 20 runner, over the 5K, they would be in that race. And then there was another 5K for maybe people who didn't fall under that 20-minute 5K banner. I'm interested to talk about that after I get the results out as well, because it's funny what that last race, the people who were in that. But yeah, with regards to the races, so the men's 5K elite race, you had Brahane Gebre Brahane from Anadelst Riders. He came first in 14:31. I think that he just outkicked Neil Johnston from Anadelst Riders, also 14:31-ish. And then Chris Fielding from Sale Harriers, he came third in 14:35. It looked like to me when they came around to the bridge on the last lap, not the last bridge, but the one before that, Chris Fielding was off the front by like 10 or 15 meters. So yeah, it's either those fellas must have picked up or he maybe started to fade a bit. But yeah, I did say to Neil Johnston, if he was looking to win that, he shouldn't have had Brahane there in the last 200 meters, because back Brahane every day for the sprint finish. Men's team results, Anadelst Riders, followed by Lagan Valley, followed by North Belfast. So well done to all those guys. Women's 5K elite race, you had Hannah Gilliland from Anadelst Riders. I think it was a PB in 16 minutes and 18 seconds. Absolutely super running. She was followed in by Anna Gardner from East Down in 16 minutes 35. And then Rebecca Osborne from Dromore AC. She came third in 16:46. And yeah, the women's team results were Anadelst Riders number one, Willowfield second, and North Down AC third. What did you think of the races, Michael?
Yeah, I thought the races were really intriguing, and I think the change of format allowed the elite race to be a spectacle because for the first time in years, you could actually see the final lap unfold. Usually, the leading runners are buried in the masses, and you really can't work out what's happening. Starting with the ladies, yeah, Hannah Gilliland produced a sensational run, and it's a massive PB. It's kind of like a bookend to what she did in the Sealy, which again was another imperious, really dominant run. And in between that, she's had a pretty so-so cross-country season. But she has shown once again that when she's on it, she's really, really good. And I think can probably, if she can take this form into the track season, I think she can have a really big track season. Anna Gardner was really game, and in the early stages was pushing really hard after Hannah, just tied up a wee bit in the last K, but still 16:35 is really good running. I think Robin McKee was in third place for a long time, and the wheels came off maybe post her efforts at the weekend in the last K, and Rebecca Osborne, who's a really, really canny racer, came through really well to claim third. Good win by the Striders ladies, strong team. Good to see Willowfield on the podium as well. Men's race, I thought, was a really, really fantastic race to watch. Just as it unfolded, wasn't super fast at the start. There was a really big leading group. You could see some of the young bucks up in the lead. And I thought, watching it, I thought, right, this race is set up for Brahane because he just was gliding along, looking effortless. And Chris Fielding, who doesn't have the same flat speed as either Brahani or Neil, obviously made a bit of an effort to get away, really in the last K, but couldn't manage it. And then, coming up the home straight, Brahani, looked really, really in control and just had a bit too much for Neil, who again produced a great run, just a few days after a 10K cross country. I think it's Brahani's biggest win to date. When you look at Brahani training and running around, he looks like the full package. I mean, he's tall, he's a really elegant style, he can go through the gears. But I think so far he's kind of underwhelmed. And maybe this is the start of him really starting to fulfill his potential, because on the track, he looks to me like a guy who should be running low 340s, should be going under 14 minutes for 5K and things. And maybe this will inspire him to go better. But a really, really good race. Good win by Striders, team who packed really well. Great run by Luke Dinsmore, who'd also done the Intercounties. And I want to give a shout out to a couple of guys. Oisin McGloin, who's a junior, really strong run for Lagan Valley, went sub 15, and he went out hard, went with the leading pack. Another really good one run was from Jimmy Sloan, I think a PB of 15:14, and he was expertly guided round by Stephen Connolly, who's a very experienced runner, and I think said to Jimmy a couple of times to slow down and just hang in. So there is wisdom in listening to your elders sometimes, but
Yeah.
yeah, good, nice racing.
Yeah, definitely. Jimmy Sloan was absolutely chuffed with that as well. He was telling me that he'd been trying for a couple of years to go under 15:20. So this could be the next part of him going under 15 in the future.
We were going to talk about the format and the change, which I thought worked really, really well in terms of allowing the championship race to breathe and have the space it deserves. But, and it's, you're probably going to raise this, there were some absolute bandits in the other race.
Yeah, so the idea was, anyone who could run sub 20 for a 5K should be in that elite race. And then there was another race for people potentially who weren't in that category. But there's a good, what do we have? Over 40 people who finished sub 20 in that second 5K race, and the top three runners in that second race were all from Clonliffe Harriers, and they all ran between 16:30 and 17:15. So I don't know if they were just going to pick up a few vouchers for pure running or what the deal was, but surely you're in the first race.
I mean, it's certainly a strange one. But if we go back a couple of years ago, Chris Pollock from Striders won the 3K race, and we were all laughing because Big Bird is about 6 foot 5, and he was on the podium beside a kid who was about 14 and was about 3 foot 11. So it was these things have happened before.
You don't need to race fast, you just need to race smart. That's the idea.
Absolutely. And a win's a win, you know.
That's it. Wins win. No, but I agree. I think that the format was much better than previous years because you're not just battling through all of this traffic as you come around on that second lap and sort of final lap.
One of the absolutely startling things I saw in the race was Simon Murray from Striders was on his bike leading the runners. And when the championship race had just started, a bloody car came up the embankment from Dunn's, blissfully unaware that there were, like, I don't know, several hundred runners hurtling down the road. And luckily, Simon managed to get the guy to pull in. But it's just amazing that, somebody's driving around, is able to get through marshals, doesn't click for them that something's going on. So,
Oh, to
yeah.
be blissfully unaware.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Yeah. Congrats to Simon Murray as well. I think he came first in the bike race, so that was
He
good.
did,
Good
he
from
did,
him.
he did. Yeah,
He's
and a win's a win.
back on top. Yeah, that wins a win, as we know. What about we just go to a couple of sort of I guess quicker race recaps and results?
It's been a crazy, crazy weekend. Lots of stuff going on.
Tons of stuff
So
since we
do you want
recorded
to kick
last.
off with Jimmy's 10K down in Downpatrick?
Yep, Jimmy's 10K. So that was a race put on by Eastdown AC. Robbie Hagan came first in 31:34. He's from Newcastle AC. Jimmy Sloan, 33 minutes. Annandale Striders. And then third place was Chris McCaffrey from St. Phil Striders in 33:03. So sounds like Jimmy might have put in a bit of work towards the end there to just pop into second.
Yeah.
Yeah, women's race, that was Catherine O'Connor. She came first in 36:53, and she's from Eastdown AC. Debbie McConnell, 38:50 from North Belfast. And then third place, Joanne Campbell, 41:55 from Finn Valley. So yeah, that looks like a good race and some good times there. Pretty fast for local race. A race that I actually went down and saw in person slash actually cheekily ran in was the Bohemian Half Marathon, which had a lot of Northern Irish runners down there. So I don't know if you've really seen this race before, but course is fantastic. It's down in, I think it might be, the place might be called Bohemian. It's near Navan, just down the south there. Yeah, course is really good, not too many hills, perfect conditions, not too much wind. A few people said there was a bit of wind, but I feel like after I'd done Carlingford the weekend before, that was like still as anything. But yeah, the men's results. So Martin Hoare from Selbridge AC, he came first in 66:49. Peter Somba, he came second in 66:58. He's from Dunboyne AC. And then Kieran McKenna, 69:56 from Star of the Sea AC. Zach Hannah was fourth. Noel McNally, sixth. Simon Murray, Annadel Strider, 73 minutes and 3 seconds. So yeah, I guess it's a couple of names that stood out to me in the results there. Women's race, it was Kira Wilson. She came first in 75:31, and her club is called DMPAC. Kate Purcell, she came second in 76:49. She's a Raheny Shamrock. And then Caitlin Harvey, Roadrunners AC, she came third in 77:45. And there was an epic battle in the last sort of few kilometers between Dervla and Caitlin. I think Dervla Cox from Annadel Striders had sort of left Caitlin in the dust a little bit throughout the race. And then Caitlin sort of clawed her back in, and I think it came down to the last 150 meters where Caitlin made the move and went past. And yeah, Dervla sort of, I think she sort of maybe took a bit of a turn for the worse right at the end there. She sort of yeah, got a bit wobbly and came across the line and needed to sort of sit down and recover quite quickly. So yeah, epic race, and nice to go down there and be a part of it. I just went down, I didn't get an entry, I just sort of jumped in and did like a marathon pace workout. So I ended up running 76:30, but I was in the group that was running. They all finished around about 75:30, but I realized that, you know, it was feeling really comfortable and really nice, but I realized that if I sort of stayed with this group, then not only would I be getting a PB in a half marathon that I have not bought an entry for, but it wasn't really the idea of the workout, so to speak. The idea was to just sort of go around in marathon-ish pace or marathon effort. And yeah, that was actually such a nice way to run a workout slash a race. Like, you know, all pressure's off. You just have to sort of chill out in a group and run around, and yeah, really, really enjoyed it. So I was glad that I went down there and did that. And who knows what marathon pace is going to be in London. If I can go around in 76:30 for the first half and then back that up for the second, then I will be over the moon. I don't think
You'd be in
that's,
PB land, and obviously it
yeah.
helped you then recover from your briefcase of Carlingford PTSD.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, well, the thing was, you know, as I mentioned, the conditions for Bohemian were really good, in my opinion, compared to Carlingford. There was no major headwind for like 5 miles of the race. And the effort, so I ran 76:30 in Carlingford, and then I ran 76:30 in Bohemian. But when I finished Carlingford, I was like keeling over, almost vomiting. I'd been working that hard. But finishing Bohemian, I just jogged it in, felt great, started chatting to some people straight after, you know, bag of potatoes straight down the hatch. Like, it was, yeah, it's just funny how like conditions can really affect that kind of thing. So yeah, there are a couple of good performances by a few of the guys I train with over at Roadrunners. Yeah, Jack and Paddy, shout out to them. They both ran 74 minutes low, and I think those were monster PBs by those fellas, and they always love getting their name called out in this pod, so thought I'd throw those in there.
Well done, guys.
Yeah, moving on from there, Derry 10 Mile. Timmy Johnston, Annandale Strider, he came first in 52-53. Sort of see him pop up from time to time on the results, just picks and
Yeah,
chooses
well,
a good
Timmy's
race.
had a tricky year. He pre-Christmas he had a really niggly injury that basically trashed most of his cross-country season, and he, I think, ran Stormont was his first race. Then did a great job for Striders in the senior cross-country, and I think the Derry run will have surpassed his expectations. But it's Timmy's a really good athlete, Irish international mountain runner, strong guy. So good to see him take the win.
Strong guy and a really nice guy as well. Scott Rankin, he came second. He's from Foyle Valley AC. And then Shane O'Donnell came third. He's from Ross's AC. Women's race in that 10 mile was Helen McCreadie. She ran 1 hour and 43 seconds, also from Ross's AC. Gemma McGinty, City of Derry Spartans, came second. And Hayley McAteer from Lagan Valley came third. So looked like a really nice race. And a couple of clubs that I don't recognize immediately there. Ross's AC, maybe they're more of a local club out that direction.
They're Donegal. They're sort of out on the Atlantic coast in the west of Donegal.
Yeah, very good. Probably very used to running in wind then, I imagine.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. University cross country at the Queen's playing field. So I didn't actually know that this was happening until I was just out on Saturday running around the Dub, and I ran into Brendan and Brandon from Annandale Striders, and he had mentioned that it was happening. So yeah, the women's race, that was actually, I guess for a bit of context, I believe that this is like the Irish universities, like big cross country race where all the universities come together and put in teams.
That's right, yep.
I think it followed the same course as the Malcolm Cup, so at the Queen's playing fields. The women's race, it was Rosha Roberts. She's from North Belfast, as we know, but she was running for Dublin City University. She came first. She got the win over Hannah Gilliland. Annandale Strider, who was also, she was running for QUB, Queen's University Belfast. The third place was Celine Gavin from Trinity College Dublin, who she's also a Dublin City Harriers athlete. The team's result for the women's race, it was Trinity College followed by University College Dublin and then Dublin City University. In the men's race, Niall Murphy from University of Limerick came first, followed by Sean McGinley from Dublin City University, I think that one is, and then
Yep.
Pierre Merchant from TCD. I don't have the
Trinity College, Trinity
Trinity
guy.
College. Yeah, see, this is my downfall on this Northern Irish podcast, is I don't have
Pierre,
this
I think,
knowledge.
is a
But yeah.
PhD student, and he's been there a while.
Okay. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, and
Perpetual
then
student.
yeah. Team results, University of Limerick came first, Dublin City College second, and University of Galway third. So yeah, looked like it was a good day. And Brandon said that the races were plenty fast and there was a lot of action. So that's a good, nice local one to have. What about the
Okay,
Irish
so
schools, Michael? You got some highlights from that?
I have. The Irish schools were in Dublin, and just really deal with the Northern Irish highlights. Anna Gardner, from East Down, representing Assumption College, which of course is Ciara McGeehan's old school. She won the senior girls title for the second year running, which is a pretty great achievement. She was followed home by Lucy Foster from Down High, who also runs for Willowfield. In the intermediate girls, Emily Morris from Strathearn was on the podium in third place, and she led her team also to a team bronze. Junior boys, BRA, my old school, Evan Tosh grabbed a silver. And in the minor girls, Madison Welby took gold, which is again well done to her. Northern Irish schools found team success with all the usual suspects. St Colman's from Newry, Rory Friel's team. St Michael's from Enniskillen. St Malachy's from Belfast. And Mount Lourdes from Enniskillen, all making podiums. Irish schools is really interesting for lots of reasons. But one of the things I always enjoy is that trying to pick a couple of years later, the athletes who then make that transition from senior level at schools and start making Irish teams, and look like that they might be the next generation of top Irish athletes. And I think in Anna Gardner, there's a young woman to be excited about because she's had a really stellar school career, has had a fantastic run this year in the Eurocross, I think finishing seventh. And we just may as well just mention now, she's also been selected for Ireland for the World Cross Country. So I'm not sure what her plans are for next year. Possibly America beckons, but I think wherever she goes, she's someone we're going to be hearing about in the future.
Yeah, definitely. It's really interesting to know what she's thinking, if she's going to stay local or if she's been sort of in cahoots with a few American universities. I
Yes,
imagine.
she will. She could pick where, she won't be short of offers, I would imagine.
What did Kira McGeehan do? Do you know? Did she go over to the US?
No, Kira went to university in Dublin. And she did physio. I mean, for athletes who choose to stay in Ireland now, the scene's pretty good. The university, UCD, Dublin City University, are pretty strong running setups. Galway, until recently, was also the same. So I think it is possible to stay in Ireland and become a top athlete. But I guess there's always the cachet of going to the States. Being part of a team that competes in the NCAA and things is fabulous. You're running against the best college athletes in the world. So I think there is, if you're an athlete who I think can aspire to compete at that level, maybe it's still a very attractive proposition. I mean, the Flanagan girls have done really well going over there and have really improved. So it might be something Anna is thinking about.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's any more sort of Irish athletes. I know Brian Fay, he's sort of done that. He's gone over to the US and competed there. And that's turned out fairly well for him.
Well, a lot of the, I mean, there's a lot of good Irish athletes at the moment who'd spent time in the States, and have been at good colleges. There's several guys. Dean Casey's out there a minute. Who's a junior of the same era as Nick Griggs. But there's different ways you can do it. I think in the past it was almost just the done thing that if you were a good young Irish runner, you went to the States. That's no longer the case. It's possible that me, Nick Griggs proven it's possible to stay here and still run at the highest of levels.
It wouldn't be a hard sell, maybe if you're one of the universities in a slightly sunnier part of the US, you just tell them the stats and you get them.
Yeah, Colorado would be nice. California would be nice. Yeah. I think some of the places you can go, though, I mean, if you're going down south, the Carolinas, places like that, it can be really hot at times of the year, and that for Irish athletes can sometimes be challenging as well. So it really, I think, depends on the place. But I think someone like Anna will have lots of choices.
Definitely. Well, look, to sort of round out this first half of the episode, a couple of races that we're looking forward to. The Spa Crack 10K, which is on either Sunday, I think it will have just happened after actually just happened before we release this episode. So maybe I can catch up with Marty and just talk about a few of the results from that.
Yeah, it's interesting, Danny, because I think there's an amazing irony in calling it the Spar Crack. I was following the race last year on my bicycle, and over the last few K, there was a lot of people who didn't look like they were having much crack. But it
I'm
is
sure it'd
quite an
be.
event, and Stephen Conley's running. I don't know who else is in the field, but I think. He maybe would start as one of the favorites. After a long layoff, he's got himself into good shape pretty quickly and is coming back to form. And I would expect him to
Iskander,
go sub
maybe?
32. I don't think so. He's just started Ramadan. He hasn't entered unless he fancies a late entry. But I think Stephen will be hoping secretly Iskander doesn't show up. But.
Announce himself back on the scene with a win in the Spa Crack 10K. I think that is
Yeah,
kind of, from what I know of Stephen, that's a bit of like that's one of his babies.
he had a good run at Queen's. He ran, I think, about 15:15. He's a bit short of pace, having done very little speed work, but he looked to me that he could have run a little bit slower for a lot longer. So it wouldn't surprise me if he could, go through in 15:40 and keep it going for another 15:40. But it's a good event, and I think it's a bumper field this year. Somebody said to me 4,000 runners.
Wow. Gee whiz. Well, I'm getting out of Belfast this weekend. I'm going down to Galway, so yeah. Looking forward to that. I've looked up a few routes on Strava to see where I can do my long run. It looks dead flat, which is good and bad, I guess. Yeah, no, that'd be a good
It is
time.
flat, yeah.
A race that I'm hoping to catch a live stream of is the 10K. I think it's the Sound Running 10K that's happening over in the States. You've basically got like absolute all-stars list of people trying to make the Paris Olympics and get onto that 27-minute Olympic standard. So yeah. I think as we're sort of recording this on Friday, this will have happened over the weekend, and then the results of the race will already have happened when this goes out. But yeah,
Yeah, one
we'll
other
check
race.
back in after that.
Yeah, one other race, Danny, we should keep an eye on is Mark Kirk is heading over to England, I think tomorrow morning, with some of his squad to run in the Podium 5K, which has an absolutely stacked field. So I know that Nick Griggs, Callum Morgan, and I suspect maybe also Louis Mallon and a few other guys are going there. And I would expect Nick to go well under 14 minutes in that one, possibly Callum too. I don't know who else is out, but it's a race that in the past has attracted some really quick runners. That's why those
Fantastic.
guys didn't run Queens. They were kind of keeping their powder dry. So that's one to look out for the results.
Look, we've definitely gone hard on the results so far this episode, so we'll save those until a future episode. But yeah, maybe just for now, we end it there, and I'll pick up the second half of the episode with Marty Ray.
And say hello, send Danny my best. I see him out dandering about or running about round the forests and the trails and the riverbanks. So always looks a very chilled man.
I'll give him your best, and yeah, look forward to recording with him. But for now, yeah, thanks, Michael. Talk soon.
Cheers. Bye. Bye.
Welcome, Marty Ray, to the Backstreet Podcast. Really glad to have you here. I really enjoy getting chatting to you on some of our long runs, so I'm really happy to invite you onto the pod. How's the form? How are you going?
Oh, good. Thanks for having me on, Danny. Yeah, good, bud. Yeah, all good. Just racing season, so starting to enjoy it. Starting to do a few races here. So yeah, it's always good to train hard in the winter and sort of get the racing season starting in March and April. So all good.
Starting to reap the rewards from some hard training. Did you get up to much this weekend or?
What was it, Paddy's weekend? So I paced the crack 10K yesterday, the 40-minute group, which was good fun. That's probably about the second or probably about the third time I've done that. So yeah, the numbers are getting bigger in the race alone, and then even in our group, we probably had, I don't know, maybe started off with maybe 40, probably got about half of them over anyway. Obviously, some of them might have went on ahead, we might have seen them, but probably finished with about 20 in the group now. So the standards definitely getting better. I mean, 40 minutes, good going for 10K.
4,000 runners I saw there, or something crazy like that.
And you know what? It runs well. You wouldn't think it was 4,000 runners. I don't know what it is, whether it's there's nothing else happening in Belfast and on St. Paddy's morning, so there's no traffic about it. Just seemed to be just sort of for the runners. I had different waves this year. We had balloons this year, which was pretty good. So yeah, as I say, when you're sort of pacing 40 and you're closer to the front, you don't notice as much afterwards, sort of thing, until you get to the finish line. Then there's just streams and streams of people coming in. But it's a super idea brought in by, I think, Martino Müller. I don't know how many years ago, maybe 10 years now it's been going. So yeah, it's really grown and grown and grown.
It'd be remiss not to mention Stephen Connolly got the win, I guess. So yeah, shout out to him. Good running. He's back with some vengeance, which is
Notice that I wasn't privy to the front of the field. We could sort of see when you get into Elmwood Park, there's a couple of switchbacks, so we could sort of see. I was able to see the first girl, and I was able to see Derbla and Gladys. So I was able to see the first three girls when I was going the other way, yeah. But I didn't see the men's, but I did see Steve walking about with a pretty hefty goodie bag. So he must be back.
Yeah, must be chuffed. So look, moving sort of on from there, do you want to just tell us a bit about yourself? You know, who is Marty Ray, and maybe just more so from like a running perspective? How'd you get into running?
Okay. So most people probably know me now, probably from doing a wee bit of pacing in and around the local races and races abroad. Probably started running 2000 and around 2000. I went the long way about it. I ended up doing ultras. Didn't really enjoy running the school. Wasn't very good at running the school. Played a lot of Gaelic, a lot of basketball stuff, like a lot of team sports. And then it wasn't until I sort of got to my mid-20s I moved away to do a bit of teaching over in England. I'm a PE teacher, so I started teaching over in England. Wasn't a lot of basketball or Gaelic over there, so I sort of almost started running by accident. Sort of got hooked. No real park runs in them days, not a lot of tents. So it was just sort of, you know, really enjoyed just getting out in the countryside and stuff. So before I knew it, I was doing sort of 2 hours, 3 hour runs sort of thing. So we would jump into sort of off-road marathons and ultras. My first race, ironically, was probably a pretty famous ultra now, the Leadville 100. That was more just, I wanted, back in the end days, I was sort of young, free, and I wouldn't say single, but relatively single. So I had a few quid when you always start teaching. So I thought, you know what, I'll go away to America and do something nice and sort of scar the internet. Internet had only really started then, ironically, maybe 4 or 5 years. So there wasn't an awful lot of options. I liked the idea of going away to Colorado and doing a race in the Rockies. So I sort of done that as my first race. Didn't finish hasting at the end. I got there about 87 miles. I'd done very little training. When I think about it now, it was very little training, probably running an hour a day or whatever it was, but very, very, very little. A couple of 2-3 hour runs. And then I got there about 87 miles. My feet had blown up from the altitude. I'd taken my shoes off to give my rest, and I end up just scratching at the end, just saying, do you know what? I'm happy with 87 miles sort of thing. Just enjoyed my holiday. And then after that, I sort of got into a wee bit, started looking at other races. Started doing a few marathons with my club over there. Jumped into London a couple of times because we weren't too far from London, and then sort of realised that I was getting quicker and quicker. I mean, I don't know about how you started, but when you join a running club, you see runners as like real runners, and you don't see yourself as a runner per se. So I was like, oh, everyone else is really fast. And then I realised I was sort of getting my times down, and my first Belfast was probably 4.5 hours. Sort of got that down to 3.5 hours, close to three, and then I ran a couple of off-road marathons, broke three a couple of times in off-road marathons. So I knew then I was, you know, thereabouts. So at that stage, you were maybe coming top five, top ten, a couple of off-road marathons, which is what I really enjoyed when I was over in England. I mean, there's hundreds of them. And then I went back up again and enjoyed doing the ultras, and got relatively successful doing the ultras. Got picked for the Irish team, done 10 or 11 races for the Irish team, mostly 100K, 50K, a couple of 24 hours. Really enjoyed that. And as a result of that, I ended up started to do a wee bit of pacing. I wrote to a couple of organisations, London, Dublin, Belfast, stuff like that there. I basically said, listen, I'm training for, at that stage, I was training for 100K, 100K. So my 100K pace was sub 3 hour pace. It was sort of 6:57s. I was trying to break 7 hours for the 100K, which I never did. But I got pretty close to it. And so I was always looking to run around sevens or sort of 6:50. So I thought, you know what, see if you give me a flag or you give me a pole, I'll run around and, you know, just help other people out. So that's sort of how the pacing started. Probably one of the first pacers in London, sort of set up in Belfast, set up in Dublin, etc., etc. Because there were good training runs, you know, you were able to just jump in and do a wee bit of training with that. So I ended up, you know, pacing quite a lot of marathons, raced quite a lot as well, you know, relatively successful. But I don't really enjoy the road marathons. It's more the off-road marathons. I enjoy going to the off-road marathons and giving them a go and trying to get sort of top 10, ordinary marathon that was, you know, probably above average. But I did really enjoy the off-road stuff. Unfortunately for me, I'm probably better at road, but I really enjoyed the off-road. So that's a wee bit of a background.
Yeah, 2:35 for the marathon. That's the PB.
2:35, yeah. Sort of starting around 2:35, probably run sub 2:40, 20 odd time sort of thing. Like, you know, never really, you know, every time I get really, really fit, I would see an ultra and I would go, you know what, I'm going to jump in the ultra. And instead of a marathon, use a marathon as a training run for the ultra, you know, something else would pop up and, you know, my head was turned too many times, you know. So it just, yeah, 2:35 in Dublin 1 year. And then when I ran that, I thought I was going to run much quicker because it felt great. But I just my head was turned too many times with, you know, yourself, probably you're probably something similar. Just when you get in good nick, oh, wouldn't mind doing this 100 meter or see this lovely race over in Tenerife or see, you know, and it just enjoy. My problem is I probably enjoy running too much. You know, I just, my head's turned to different distances and different, you know, different challenges sort of thing. Like, yeah, so I sort of sat sort of mid 2:30s for a long time and haven't got too close to it since.
Yeah, how many marathons have you done? And would you say that that's your favorite event to sort of hop into? Or you probably the trail stuff's more interesting.
Yeah, do you know what? I've probably done well over 100. It's hard to tell because at the start, most of them aren't a par 10. A lot of the pacing gigs aren't a par 10 because when we started pacing, you wouldn't even get a number; you just got a flag. So probably half the pacing gigs, you're not a statistic on par 10, so to speak. A lot of the off-road marathons back in the sort of mid-2000s probably aren't par 10. So I would say probably about 110, 120. Probably paced, I don't know, set 60, 70, sort of sub-3 sort of thing. Like, you know, so done a couple of other ones, maybe 3:34 hour. Very, very rarely. If I was training for an ultra, I might try and jump into a 4 hour or whatever. But yeah, I think the marathon's probably my favorite. The marathon and the 100 miler are probably my two favorite distance. But as you say, off-road more than road.
What about the 100K world champs? Would you say that was a career highlight? You came 45th 1 year in the world for that?
Yeah, that was probably in hot. Yeah, well, the problem with the world champs for the ultras are they're normally laps. So that race, so we raced in Holland a couple of times, 10 laps of 10K. 10K. America, a lot of them were, some of them were like 20 laps of 5K when we're doing with the Doha, which is 20 laps of 5K. I'm not a big lap person. Again, the good thing about off-roads is A to B, but world champs are obviously world champs and they're a big deal. You get an Irish best, you know, you're competing against the best guys in the world. A lot of them world champs, you know, you've got some of the other guys jumping in with, you know, Zach Bitter and stuff done a lot of them. Under case, Dean Karnassus, you know, some of them guys would have jumped into the road just like me to get an international best. So yeah, and you know, you're going away and visiting places, and I just enjoy getting out and about and visiting new places. So that gave me the opportunity to race in, say, Doha, Taiwan, America, a lot of places in Europe. So it opened up new doors and new places to run. But a lot of world champs, even the Olympic marathons, for example, are normally four laps at 10K rather than, you know, 26 mile sort of straight. And the reason for that is it's easy for spectators. It's easy for people to fuel themselves if they know they're going to have two stations every 10K or one station every 5K. So it's much easier for the race organizers. But the favorite races would obviously be A to B. And there wasn't too many of the world champs, the European champs that were A to B. Some of them, you may have got two laps. I think there was a race in Italy, maybe the world champs 1 year, or the European champs 1 year. That was A to B, Florence to Firenze, I think it was. And it was basically 50K uphill and 50K downhill. So I did enjoy that. But as I say, I'm not really a lap person. Because it just reminds me of doing the track or, you know, seeing the same thing. A lot of people don't mind that. A lot of people are, you know, good rhythm runners and stuff like that, really enjoy that. Not really my scene, but yes, it opened up an awful lot of doors for me.
Would you relate those 100K races, like the flat lapped courses, would you relate those more to a marathon, or would you relate those more to like an ultra marathon, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, I would see them more as a marathon because they're time trials, you know, and time trial, most marathons are time trials. You know, most people go into marathons now with a time in their head. So whether it's 3 hours, 4 hours, 2:30, whatever. So then they're doing in the math in their head, they're doing the maths. I need to do X amount per 5K, X amount per mile, X amount per K. Whereas a lot of the A to B races, let's say it's 100 mile or 100K, it's just you're running the field, you're running, you'll have a hill, you might, some of them you might even be walking up the hill, you know, some of them you might be, just depending on how steep it is. But the 100Ks are still very much, you know, time trialing. So for me, it was always trying to get close to that sort of 7 minute mile time, which, you know, would have got me close to sort of 7 hours for the 100K. 100 miles, wee bit different. Well, I mean, there's not a lot of road 100 miles, but there are quite a lot of flat 100 miles. I've done quite a few. But the older I get, the more I don't like time trialing sort of thing. That's why even now with marathons, I love doing them, but, you know, competing and racing them, as I say, I see them more as time trialing. Whereas now, because I'm not chasing the time, I enjoy going in and say, right, I'm going to try and beat Danny Squires here. I'm going to try and beat such and such or such. You know, I would pick people that are close to my ability level and basically see if I can race them, which is totally different. And that's my advice to a lot of people that are doing marathons now. Get into the rhythm the first couple of miles and then try and stay away from the watch a wee tiny bit and run the feed. And that's probably the strength at the minute, because when we were taught to run, it was run the feed. We didn't have Garmins, we had Casio watches, so a lot of the pacing we'd done was like, I paced a lot of races without a watch, even, you know, the sub three without, just with a Casio, we didn't have, you know, we didn't have that there. So I was taught the skill of pacing myself. Now, and you know yourself, when you're in a race now, people are looking at their watches every 5 minutes to see if they're going too fast or too slow, which suggests to me they don't understand what pacing is. I think watches have spoiled us now a wee tiny bit. Good too, but it has spoiled us a wee tiny bit.
I agree. Like the best gauge of how to run something is effort based, I think. And, you know, yeah, ultimately you run your best if you're running the correct effort or the, you know, the best effort for that sort of distance. Do you have any do you have any races that you would like to do? Any bucket list races?
Do you know what I would like to do a race you're doing this year? Actually, UTMB. I had an opportunity to do it a couple of times back in the early 2000s, and it didn't really come to fruition. More just because it's an iconic race. It's probably not my type of race. There'll be an awful lot of walking in it, an awful lot of, you know, down, you know, steep downhills, which I'm not madly fond of. I just like the idea of the course, the, you know, the way it circumnavigates sort of three, obviously Mont Blanc, and with three countries, and it's probably maybe got a wee tiny bit too commercial now. But I do like the idea of everyone being in Chamonix that whole weekend. There's four or five different races. I would like to do that. Apart from that, I'd like to go back and do Leadville again. I hopefully will, once it turns sort of 50, and give that, you know, finish that off sort of thing. Western States is probably one of the biggest ones in the trail. Again, it probably comes at the wrong time. It sort of comes mid-June, and as a teacher, it's not really easy getting 2 weeks off in mid-June. You'd really need to go over and do a bit of training for that, because it can get very warm there. That they were the biggest ones, but. And nowadays, it was over in Tenerife doing the Blue Trail. So there's lots of different ones now, new ones out. So I used to always be fascinated by the Spartathlon, which is the one in Greece. And I was always fascinated by the one in Death Valley over in America. But fascinated more than wanting to do it. You know, the one Death Valley is far too warm for me running on the white line, but I am fascinated by the distance and fascinated by people that do it. But I wouldn't say that I really want to do it. Marathon wise, I've never done Boston, so I like to jump into Boston at some stage. But otherwise,
is that the only major you haven't done?
It's not the only major. I haven't done Tokyo either. And you know what? You know what? I would maybe do it someday, but I'm not a big fan of just chasing, you know, mate, you know, I don't know whether it's a commercial milestone or whatever it is sort of thing. Like, you know, I do get it. You know, a couple of friends, as you know, done it the last couple of weeks, Neil Weir, Steve Austin, who I run with quite a lot, they done it, and you know, brilliant. Because again, it probably just gets you seeing six different marathons and stuff like that. But listen, I could stick to London all day long. I really enjoy New York. I really enjoy Berlin. But I'd like to do Boston just because I really like Boston as a city. And it's a bit of an iconic one. But again, the more you do these, the more you sort of stick to the same ones, the more you're sort of handicapping yourself to go and do more and more sort of thing. So I do London most years, so it sort of handicaps me in the middle of April, because it's a good gig. It sort of handicaps me in the middle of April to get over and doing Boston or trying different marathons, and obviously Belfast in the middle of April as well, or the end of April. So I end up doing the sort of same ones in the middle of the spring. So I like to, in the autumn, I like to get out and try different ones.
Yeah. Talk to me about London. So how many times do you think you've done London?
Probably done London every year, but maybe one from 2002, maybe 2001. So maybe 22, 23 times. Can't remember. There was one year I didn't do it. I may have been doing an ultra. It may have been a world champ time or Anglo-Celtic plate, which is like a Ireland, England, Scotland, Wales, which is on next week, I think, or the week after. Couple of local boys doing that there. Barry McCarroll and stuff are doing that there in a couple of weeks. That was on in April, so I may have been doing that the time I didn't do London. But yeah, probably been pacing now since about two. Raced it a couple of times early, and then I probably paced it from 2005. So yeah, probably done. Yeah, well over 20 times. Probably my favorite race, probably my favorite weekend. It's handy to get to, handy to get around. It has, over the last couple of years, I think personally, they've made a wee tiny bit, they've made changes with pens and stuff that don't really suit pacers or don't really suit the faster guys, because they've put us in different pens and it's been difficult to get past people. But I don't know whether that was a COVID thing, whether they changed that coming back from COVID, and whether they're going to change it back again. But yeah, it's pretty, you know, it's about as close as the Olympics as you get. You know, you're running and it's 10, 6 or 7 deep the whole way around. And yeah, yeah, it's a fantastic race.
Yeah, I absolutely loved doing it last year. It was one of the best things I've ever done, I reckon. What's how would you sort of describe it for people that haven't done it? Well, you know, what should be expecting from London Marathon?
So it starts probably about 10 miles outside London, over in over towards Greenwich and Blackheath. Pretty easy to get to at the start. Pretty easy to get to at the start. On the Sunday morning, every, you know, trains go out. There are a lot of marathons can be different. Like New York, for example, you need to be there 3 or 4 hours before everyone's going to, you know, it's literally 26 miles away from New York. So you have to get a bus, you have to get the Staten Island Ferry. There's all different ways. Whereas London, people always say, oh, where do you stay in London for the weekend? Doesn't really matter. You get up in the morning, you get the tube to the train station, and there's the trains bring you out towards Blackheath and Greenwich. There's three different start areas, green, red, and blue. That's basically just because at the start of the marathon, there's obviously massive crowds, but the streets are very narrow for the first 3 miles. So they try and break it up, and so that genuinely three different starts. Everyone
is that yellow as well?
Well, last year they had a yellow. I actually paced in yellow last year, and I didn't know anything. I'd never heard of yellow. I don't know if it's a new thing and I still do this day. To this day, can't figure out what yellow is. I thought it might have been some sort of, they used to bring in good free age pens and stuff like that. So I thought there was only one pacer in yellow last year, and it was a 3 hour. It was me, and yet there was a rhino in there. There was a, you know, so it wasn't just 3 hour guys. It was guys running 3 hours to 6 hours sort of thing. And there was maybe only 200 in the pen. Bizarre, no idea why they had yellow. Asked a couple of times, so I don't know whether there's a yellow again this year, but yellow just basically formed in the blue almost straight away. So that's what I'm saying. They fiddle about with a start sometimes they stick the good free age in their own pen, and then they bring them out before, they've done that 2 or 3 years in a row there, they bring them out into their own, they bring them out before the mass start. But after about 3 miles, first three miles are pretty much downhill, ironically. If you look at the course profile, it can be a fast start if you get a good if you're near the front, the problem that you get with London, and it's probably the only problem you get with London, it's just so busy. So it's so difficult to, you know, if you're sitting even at the 3R group like me, so difficult to get past people at the start. Or so you just sort of have to go. You have to hope that everyone goes into the right pen and they're running the right pace. Sometimes it might I might run a 7:10 first mile. Sometimes I might run a 6:40 because I can't do anything different. But after 3 mile, you sort of merge into almost like a three lane road. Then it's pretty uneventful until you get the Tower Bridge. You do go past Cutty Sark, brilliant crowds and stuff like that there. You know, everyone's waiting at TV cameras. The race sort of starts at halfway when you go over Tower Bridge. Tower Bridge is fantastic. Again, six or seven deep, everyone's shouting your name. It's just, you know, it's phenomenal. The problem is when you get to Tower Bridge, you hang a right. The finish line's to the left. The finish line's about 3 miles to the left. You have to hang a right and head towards Canary Wharf, where obviously all the big buildings are. Can have problems sometimes with your satellite signal. And again, talking about earlier on, a lot of people will panic then, you know, because you go through a couple of bridges and you can lose your satellite signal. So Canary Wharf, it's not until probably going to Canary Wharf probably 16, 17, it's not until you come back on yourself and you're running towards a finish that I think, you know, it can get a bit, you know, I sometimes think when you're running away from the finish line in any race, psychologically you're not going anywhere. So not until you get to Canary Wharf, you hang a left and then you'll head back towards Tower Bridge. You can actually see the guys on the other side running towards Canary Wharf. So I think you get a wee bit of a confidence boost that there's guys slower than you, no matter who you are. You know, when the 3R guys, when my group are heading towards Canary Wharf, the elites are heading back towards they're finishing. When I'm going the other way, the 4R guys are coming back, and same with the 4R guys, you know, the 5R guys. So yeah, you get a wee bit of a boost going back the other way. You can see you maybe shoot on clubmates the other side, and then you get the Tower Bridge, and then the last sort of 3 or 4 miles are along the river. If you've any legs there, fantastic. Most people don't have any legs there, so you're sort of looking out for a big bend or the big wheel. Once you see big bend, the big wheel, and you're getting close to that, that's a great sign. And then when you get the big bend and the big wheel, you hang a right, and it's probably about a mile from there. That's central London. You run towards Buckingham Palace. Once you get to Buckingham Palace, you have about, I don't know, 200 meters to go, and that's a glory leg. If you can get yourself to there, it's great. But I mean, I think it's handy. London's so handy to get around, to watch. You know, you can just jump on the tubes and go from. My advice is you probably don't need to be in the first 13 mile. You know, a lot of people say, we're at the start line. I wouldn't bother going out to the start line. You know, I just, you know, with the sort of 13, 14, you'll be able to see people once they go past you. You should walk back towards the finish line and they'll end up running past you again. But it can be very busy, Danny. I'm sure, as you know, there are a lot of people do get overwhelmed. Because they're not used to, you know, they're used to doing a wee training run by themselves or two or three guys on Saturday morning, Sunday morning, and they go into London or doing Belfast or doing Dublin, which are big enough marathons, but London's just something else. I think last year I ended up with 27 miles, ironically, because I had to jump on the curbs and jump off curbs and jump on curbs and jump off curbs just to get round the guys that were probably in the wrong pen. So that can be a problem in London. If you're looking at fast time, again, whether it's 4 hours or, you know, because fast time for you is different than a fast time for me, which is different than a fast time for someone else, you know. So the fast time could be 4 hours, 4:30. It can get very busy.
Any tips for, I guess, runners that want to get the most out of, you know, their fitness and the race on race day, you know, like any, I know there's like a blue line that you can follow that is technically like the shortest way around the course.
Yeah, but we'll not see it. The only people that see that are the elites. There is a blue line. My advice sometimes is to run in front of the pacers. You do find that a lot of the people like running beside the pacers and behind the pacers. There's normally a big gap in front of the pacers. So my advice to some people in my group is just run, I don't know, 5 meters ahead of us, and you'll hear us, you'll feel us, you'll, you know, there'll always be a bit of a there'll always be a bit of a gap, but you're basically trying to find the gaps to run in, and say they generally are in front of the Pacers. Behind the Pacers are definitely the busiest areas. So just try and find a wee bit of space. Probably try and, you know, I know a lot of people wearing headphones and stuff, but see, for London, I wouldn't wear headphones because I think you miss the atmosphere and stuff like that. You know, it's just, I mean, the atmosphere alone will sort of, I know a lot of people listen to music and stuff like that, but I was just trying to take it in. And unless you're going for a PB or you've got some sort of time in your, you know, a lot of guys that I sort of helped out with and stuff, and maybe it's their first time doing it, and you know, and I ask them what time they're going for, I don't know, it's just, you know, I'd like to break this or break that. And I say, listen, see, for London, first time, just get around and enjoy it. There's loads of landmarks there. It's one of the better marathons for looking at landmarks, and you know, you can see this and you can see that. Don't stress too much yet about time in London, unless you're running at the front. I always tell guys from Belfast, if you're going for a fast time, I'd be doing Belfast because there's less people there, and it's even though it's probably hillier than London, it doesn't matter. Hills are much easier to get around than running in front of or running past, you know, a couple of thousand people. So I would say anything under 2:45, you'll get a bit of a clear run in front of you. You know, after 2:45, be prepared to be running in groups. Doesn't mean you won't run fast, but be prepared to be running in groups. So it's very important to do all your training runs, you know, jump into OMA, jump into LARN, jump into races to get used to running in groups, to get used to running over and picking up water bottles from the side, to get used to getting tripped up at the start line. All these wee sort of things I think people forget about before they get to the start line. That will happen in London. And if you're used to it, it shouldn't really faze you.
Mm. It's funny you say that about the landmarks as well. I kind of looked at the post-race photos last year, and I completely missed the fact that Big Ben was there, you know, the London Eye, all of that stuff. That was just, you know, that last few miles where you're really sort of hurting and looking for the finish line. You just block out all of that almost. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the difference probably between racing and going for a PB or just getting, and I say just in inverted commas, just getting around. I mean, obviously I'm lucky enough to be able to pace now, so I'm probably running 10-15 minutes slower than my, you know, my race pace, so I can afford to do that. Any race I normally race and I'm going flat out no matter where it is, you don't see an awful lot around you. So if you're lucky enough to get into London, you know, on a ballot or whatever it is, and you think you're only gonna do it one or two times, you know, think about just taking it in as much as humanly possible. You want to do a fast one, pick a, you know, a smaller city one that, you know, that maybe a wee bit flat, and give that a go.
And you're backing it up. You're going to pace Belfast Marathon as well. What's the go with pacing? Do you just enjoy doing that, and it's a bit of a way of getting a good run, a bit of training run, or do you like, is there like a financial incentive, or you like the handshakes and the high fives after?
No, but there's not much perks of the job anymore. In London at the start, we would have got quite a lot paid, but now there's nothing, not much there. Do you know what? I just really enjoy it now. I mean, I don't really race an awful lot anymore. I'm hitting 50. My best days are behind me, but I still like to be able to keep in good enough nick that I can pace three, because three is still, and you know, such a fast time for an awful lot of people. I raced Dublin there in October. It's probably the first time I've raced a marathon in, I don't know, 10 years anyway. And I thought to myself, this spring, I normally just race either Belfast or London, or if I pace one or the other, I'll do a slower one for the second time. But I thought, you know what, I'm a good nick. I'd like to do the 2-3s back to back, because it won't kill me, but at the same time, it's challenging for me. It's a big challenge. I need to stay on top of it to do that. And then in October again, I will hopefully race. I'm probably getting a wee bit too old now to be racing twice a year. Just with regards to, you know, I think the older you get, the more chance you have of picking up niggles and stuff like that. So with the 3 hours and be nice and controlled. Like, and you know, and it you're giving a wee tiny bit back into running, which, you know, I don't really have an awful lot of time to do an awful lot of that anymore. So it is nice to give to give people. I mean, I don't do Facebook. I've only really started Strava recently. You know, I do Twitter, but it's more to do with reading stuff. So it's not for the high fives. But I do really enjoy that. You do get a bit of a buzz for the first 10 minutes afterwards, and then obviously you just go on and do your own thing after that. London, obviously, it's a big privilege to be able to. You know, you're guaranteed a spot every single year. There's not too many people that are guaranteed a spot every single year, you know. So I'll maybe try and stay. I'll be 50 next year. Maybe next year, maybe my last London. I'll maybe the pace 3 hours anyway. Maybe after that, I'll do what you said, even start pacing the 3.5 and the 4, and I'll be able to take even more in and a bit more of a leisurely run, because I do still have to train now. Back in the day, 10, 15 years ago, I was always in good ultra, Nick, so I didn't have to train as much for the sub threes. But now I definitely have to keep me on the ball, you know.
The amount of times that you've paced, has it always gone to plan, or have you sort of come through halfway, 5 minutes down, and you've got a whole group of stressing out people?
Well, as I said earlier on, I've paced quite a lot. I have failed a couple of times, probably 3 times. I haven't done it once. In Dublin, I think I end up having the flu. I tried it, just couldn't, just dropped out at maybe 20 mile. London one time, the warm year, about 6 or 7 years ago, I tripped up, end up over the barrier. A load of people just putting flakers off. It was, I don't know, 25, 26 degrees. I didn't finish it that year. So there has been a couple of times that I haven't finished it, and I think that's why it's important now. Again, 10, 15, there's maybe only one person doing it. Now there's two or three, because at the end of the day, we are runners. So we do have bad days pacing as we do racing. With regard to going off too fast and too slow, yeah, there's probably some years I have went through halfway, maybe a wee tiny bit too quick. More so in the likes of London, where it's pretty hard to control your pace for the first wee bit until you get your burns. Belfast, the old Belfast course, the halfway mark was at the top of the Antrim Road. So sometimes in Belfast, we try and give ourselves a couple of minutes, maybe at the bottom of the hill, to enable us to go that tight. So it was more tactical. You knew the hill was coming, and you were getting the downhill, and you were getting the big uphill. So it wouldn't have been 6:50s per se, or whatever it is. You know, we might have run a 6:40, and then we might have run a 7:10 or whatever. So I think that's why you need course knowledge for a lot of these sort of pacing gigs, somewhere like Berlin, which you paced before, dead flat. So you don't really need to, you know, worry too much about that. I was over doing the Yorkshire Marathon a couple of years ago for Runner's World. Again, that's in the middle of the Yorkshire countryside, couple of wee hills and stuff. So it is good sometimes to have course knowledge, so that you do know that you want to be 30 seconds up by this time, or you want to be, you know, you want to leave a wee tiny bit for the end. And I think probably in the early days, wouldn't say a panic, but you know, at the start of London, you might have got the 3-4 mile and you might have been well out, you know, and you would have panicked and tried to catch it, you know, try to make it up or try to slow down or try and quick up. Now I'm much more confident than, you know, it's going to come back. You are going to, you know, you're going to find a flat bit. You're going to find a bit that, you know, you might be able to make it up, but going down a wee hill or whatever. I think what we need to remember sometimes as pacers is that what is relatively comfortable for us isn't so comfortable for everyone else. So it is important not to go too fast. It is important, you know, not to have to give them too much to do in the second half. So some people will say, ah, oh, you know what, I'll go through halfway and, I don't know, 1:27 and give them 1:30, 1:33 in the way back. But not everyone's capable of 1:37, you know. So we do try and do it as much as humanly possible and even split. But yes, I do get it wrong sometimes. I will stick my hand up and say, because as I say, it could be windy. We could be carrying, like on Sunday there, we had the biggest balloons in the world, carrying them for the crack 10K, you know, our balloons are getting tangled. Brilliant to have a balloon, but they're getting tangled with each other. Mine end up popping in a traffic light and stuff like that there. So
yeah.
And obviously for the likes of London, some of the bigger ones, Berlin, Yorkshire, stuff like that. There we have we carry rucksacks with flags and stuff like that. So if it does get windy, there can be a drag, you know, flags have fallen off. There has been mishaps. So yeah, sometimes we've need to go to the toilet. One time in London, actually, it's very, very rarely happens. We very rarely need to go to the toilet. I think it happened once in London, probably about 14 mile, and it was carrying almost like a lollipop stick at that stage. I was gonna try and jump into the back of a, I don't know, like a housing estate or whatever. And I told, like, there was a guy running next to me. I was pacing by myself, and a guy running next to me who looked very comfortable and was breathing. I said, "Do us a favor, just hold that stick. I'm gonna jump in the toilet here, and I'll catch up in 1 minute." Jumped in the toilet, came back out again. Genuinely, maybe 50 people running on the spot, waiting for me to come back out of the toilet. And I was like, "Oh, geez." So I just lost 30 seconds. So then I had to make up the 30 seconds with all, like, it's okay maybe for me running 30 seconds a mile quicker, but for everyone else, it wasn't really the case. Like, you know, so yeah, there's things like that about going to the toilet. What do you do? Do you stop? Do you not stop? And the same now, I think when I started pacing London, I was the first, there's only one pacer pacing 3 hours. Now, I think we have 180 pacers. Obviously, the 3 hours, I think there's maybe still only three of us, one for every colour. And then once you go down, I think it's maybe every 5 minutes now. So it might be 3:05, 3:10. Yeah. So last year, they're trying to introduce a lot of international pacers. So we had a lot of guys that pace over New York. We had a lot of guys pace over in Chicago. Yeah. So it's a big operation now. Yeah. It's a big operation. Whereas, as I say, it sort of started off with maybe one or two people. But I think they enjoy used to be organized by Runners World. Now it's actually organized by the Abbott World Majors itself, sort of thing. So Runners World used to organize all this here. Now it's organized by the Martin. So I think they're like a bit of crossover, some of the New York guys coming over and vice versa, you know.
Yeah, and 3 hours is the fastest pace group. And other than that,
3 hours the fastest pace group. There was 2:45 one year. In fact, the guy who was pacing it didn't turn up, and I ended up having to do it, which wasn't too pleasant because it was a bit of a I was probably only in about 2:40 shape myself at that stage, but I was able to do it. But since that I've seen Manchester there, actually, sent the pacing guys out that enters a 2:45 pacer in Manchester. I think it was last year as well, actually. So yeah, some marathons might go as low as 2:45, but London, yeah, 3 hours the quickest in London this year.
Epic. I'll not keep you too much longer, but I did see a post on your Twitter where you're picking up a pair of Hoka Cielo, that new race shoe that they've got. Have you tried them on yet? Are they any good?
Do you know what? I haven't. Well, I have tried them on. I haven't run on them yet. I'm keeping them for a rainy day. Yeah, so I was lucky enough probably about 10, 15 years ago when Hoka sort of first came out, I was one of the first people to wear them when they weren't too cooling and big sort of stacked heels and stuff like that there. So Hoka have been very good and they've sort of looked after me over the last 10-15 years. I think their new shoe here has caught up. I've wore the Hoka Carbon X, which is a good shoe, but it's nowhere near as good as, like, the, you know, the Knicks or even the Adidas. But I think this new Hoka Cielo is well up there with the rest of them. So I will probably keep it until I'm racing a marathon. With London, we were given a pair of the New Balance carbon plate, the new Balance carbon plate. So I wear them in London. May wear the Hoka in Belfast, but they look good, and they do feel good. But as I say, Hoka and I have caught up with the rest of the world. I think Hoka branded itself more on, you know, endurance and long runs and, you know, stacked heels. And, you know, and it's been brilliant for me. It's kept me going an extra 5-10 years, you know, no problems with my hips, no problems with my knees. You know, I get very little injuries, you know, and I genuinely put that down to the Hokas.
The carbon fiber in particular, or just the Hokas?
No, not the carbon fiber, no, because I very rarely wear carbon fiber. I'm too silver carbon fiber now, Donny. No, just the Hokas themselves. No, they're just, you know, Hoka, when Hoka first came out, as I say, there were people looked at them and went, "Cheapers, why would you wear them? They're rare looking, but as I say, they're a very popular brand now. And they've obviously they've went with the times, and they've got racing shoes now, and they've got carbon fiber shoes now, and they've got trail shoes now, and stuff like that. So they're one of the top brands now.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about that new Hoka. Maybe pretty similar to the Alpha Fly. So yeah, it's a good comparison there.
They certainly look like the Alpha Fly. I think Michael down in Pure Running, so Pure Running had given me a ring that there's very hard to get their hands on them. There's only, I don't know, 10, 15 of them about at the minute, sort of thing. Like so they were lucky enough to I was lucky enough to go down and grab a pair. That's why I wanted them now. Because if I wait a couple of months I mightn't be able to get my hands on them. They're like all them sort of new carbon fiber ones that come out, they sell very, very, very quickly. So, and then obviously they run out of them, then you sort of have to go back to them again. So I wanted to get my hands on them very, very quickly.
Brilliant. Well, look, Marty, that has been an awesome chat. I'm really looking forward to, seeing how it goes in London for you and, catching up with you before then on a few runs. Really appreciate you coming on the show. And, Michael sends his regards. He couldn't make this one. He's off skiing, the lucky bugger. So,
of course he is.
Yeah, he's off skiing.
So you may hope I don't run past you in London then, Danny, and give you a wee smack in the backside. otherwise you're in trouble.
Yeah. If you're going past me in London, then I've just resigned myself to enjoying that race and taking in the sights.
You'll be fine, mate. You'll be fine. Yeah. You're fine. You'll be fine.
Yeah, fingers crossed, should be all good. All right, well, good chatting to you, Marty, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot, Dan. All the best. Thank you.